Show Me the Science with Professor Luke O'Neill.
Hello, Luke O'Neill here, and welcome to Show Me the Science, the weekly podcast where I touch on many different things. I hope you find them interesting, and I have lots of requests, actually. I've had about 10 in the last few weeks, and I'm very happy to take requests. You can email me, laoneill, with two L's, at tcd.ie, and I'll do my best. If I feel I can cover it, I'm very happy to cover any requests coming in. Now, this one is actually a request. It came in about 4 weeks ago now. Mary Murphy sent me an email saying, would I cover the science of music? And Mary, very happy to do that, because that's my big hobby after science. I love music, and that's quite common among scientists, actually. Many of them are musical, so I'm very happy to cover the science of music. And when it came in, I said, it's a bit general, and I'll look into it. But there has been recent research, and of course, Show Me the Science tries to cover the latest breakthroughs, and there's a couple of studies that have just come out saying that music is really good. Now, it's obvious that we all love music, and it's beneficial in all kinds of ways, but this research further supports music as possibly as a medical thing, as I'll explain as well. So there is recent stuff on music the whole time. It's a peculiar thing, music, in a way, because it defines us as a species in some ways. No other animal. Now, some animals do sing and they a bit and they move to rhythms, so it's not completely unique to us. But if you were to try and define what makes people human, it's playing music in very elaborate ways and really enjoying music, it seems to define us. So as ever, we see things through the lens of evolution. It must have evolved as a beneficial thing for us. And now the science supports the beneficial effects of music all the time. Now, we've been doing this for a long time. So they reckon the voice box in humans, or our ancestors rather, predates Homo sapiens 530,000 years ago. Now, how they calculate that, I don't know. They must be looking at different types of primates and, you know, the relatedness evolutionarily between us. But they reckon around about 500,000 years ago, our voice boxes changed. Our ancestors' voice boxes changed to allow us to vocalise much more elaborately. And that meant we probably started singing 500,000 years ago. Elaborate music begins with those ancestors of ours. And then the oldest musical instrument that the archaeologists have dug out is 40,000 years ago. And that was a flute made from an animal bone. A bird bone was used, and whatever that Homo sapiens was, punched some holes in the bone and blew on it and got noises and put their fingers over the holes, and now they begin to play a tune. So maybe the very first musical instrument was an Irish whistle, a bone whistle, a bit like a tin whistle, I suppose. But they reckon that's the oldest so far they've found of a musical instrument. So us humans have been enjoying music for at least 40,000 years. Now, it's important that because it predates agriculture. We only learned how to farm about 12,000 years ago. And initially they thought maybe music emerges as part of us as in social groups and in communities. And agriculture meant we begin forming the first towns, and maybe that's when the first musicians arise. But it predates that. So the hunter-gatherers, before we get to agriculture, were enjoying music even then. So it does seem to be a very ancient thing that Homo sapiens, and indeed potentially our primate ancestors, really enjoyed and enjoyed doing. So again, that idea, if something persists in a species and there's no selective pressure to get rid of it, it probably has some evolutionary advantage, would be the overall idea. And of course, the big question is, what would be the evolutionary advantage of music? Now, I may have covered this before, actually, maybe a year or so ago. It's a socially bonding thing, obviously. We all love singing together. So it's a kind of a social activity that makes us feel part of the tribe. And you see that in choirs, you see it on football terraces, you know. You can't beat a big crowd singing. It kind of bonds us together. And that might be one aspect whereby music is a socially relevant thing that helps us to socialise and feel part of something bigger than ourselves. And that's somewhat obvious. Of course, the other one they often talk about is a mother and her baby, because obviously singing lullabies will soothe the baby, bond the mother to the baby, or the father, I suppose. So that's another reason, maybe, why music comes along. And then when the baby grows up, it remembers that and then wants more music because it enjoyed it so much as an infant, and therefore it's a pleasurable thing. There's loads of different reasons like that. But the recent research is really good, and there are four aspects to the recent stuff over the past 6 to 12 months period. And the first one, a really good one, is music will speed up recovery after surgery. So incredibly, a study done by Californian scientists looked at 35 separate studies on this question. Now, that's important because we love to see what we call replication in science. If more than one lab or a group of scientists find something, then it's probably correct and not due to some local artifact, as we call it. So 35 separate studies all agree, if you've gone through surgery and there's music playing after, your recovery time is quicker, your perception of pain goes down. And that was noticed in these studies as well. And again, we love real numbers to put on these things. The need for painkillers was less if there's music playing and you're listening to music as you recover from surgery. And the numbers are as follows. The dose of the opioids. Now remember, opioids are very powerful painkillers, often given to people post-surgery to limit the pain. The average dose went from 1.654 mg, if you weren't listening to music, down to 0.758. So what that means is you are having the dose needed to give pain relief after surgery. That's a big effect. Now, the big question, of course, is what's the music doing? Well, obviously, it's decreasing stress and anxiety. And anxiety will make you perceive pain as worse. If you're more relaxed and you're wounded, you don't feel quite so much pain. If you're anxious, that the whole thing gets ramped up. And again, that's an evolutionary thing, I guess, because if you're anxious, it means there's trouble. So you want to feel the pain more to avoid what's causing the pain or whatever it is. So less anxiety means less pain. And they reckon that the music is making people less anxious. They've also measured cortisol, which is the big stress hormone. And music can lower cortisol. And that's the evidence that it's actually de-stressing the situation. So there's a really good piece of evidence that music is beneficial after surgery, probably because it is a de-stressor. And they also noticed that if music is playing as someone is coming out of anesthesia, in other words, they're beginning to wake up, and that's a sort of strange sensation, anybody who's been through it, right? It eases the transition into wakefulness, is the phrase they've used, if you have music in the background. So again, they're trying to suggest now, everybody who's post-surgery, there should be music playing. Now, of course, the question is, what kind of music? And they do address that in that study, in these Californian scientists. And it doesn't really matter, as long as it's relaxing and comforting. If you don't like heavy metal, put that on the sheet and say, don't be playing that as I'm coming around, you know. So whatever type of music that you might find soothing and enjoyable, that's the one to play, and it's comforting. A very important one not to play is Another One Bites the Dust. You can't beat those old jokes. So pick the music very carefully as you're emerging from surgery, and you'll need less painkillers and you'll ease the transition back into wakefulness. And it really is all about de-stressing. And of course, they looked at that because that was a big reason for music anyway. It is a de-stressor, as we know, if it's the right kind of music. So our first recent finding on music is recovery after surgery. Now, the second one is even more important. And again, this is a remarkable study from 2025 on dementia. Now, again, anecdotally, people would know this, that often the last thing to remain, and of course, things like Alzheimer's and dementia are awful for people, but people usually, they'll sing and they'll remember music as the dementia worsens. And it can be very comforting for them to remember songs. It's a strange business that as the memory loss begins to kick in, the last thing to go is sometimes your memory of a song. And that's why music in, for example, care homes is really important. It gives people with dementia more comfort, you know. And that's been known for quite a while. But now, this big study done in Australia in the University of Monash, they looked at 10,893 people. A lot of people were assessed over 70, and they looked at the risk of dementia in those people. Now, the ones who listened to music often, now they didn't define often in the study, but I think it's about 3 or 4 times a day maybe, there was a 39% decreased risk of dementia compared to ones who didn't listen to music often, right? And then the really good one I thought was if you play an instrument as you get older, it's 35% decreased risk of dementia in those who were learning to play or regularly played a musical instrument. And these are big effects. If I was to say to you, I will decrease your risk of dementia by about 40%, you jump at it. And so listening to music regularly will decrease the risk of dementia, very, very importantly. And it seems to be as if our musical abilities and love of music persists even though the dementia is coming on, and that can stave off dementia. And of course, it's all about the brain being triggered by the music, and it's a bit like exercising your brain, I guess, and music is having that effect. So this is a big effect. And again, that study, bottom line there is listen to lots of music as you get older, and especially music you like and enjoy. So staving off dementia is another big sort of usefulness to music. And the third one is related because, and obviously when you listen to music, you play it, there's all kinds of interesting bits of your brain being triggered here. It is a workout for the brain, is the way to think of it. And that will help the brain, you know, and stave off dementia, as I mentioned. But this one, it actually helps the brain, helps learning, helps connectedness in the brain. Now, we call this brain plasticity. is what neuroscientists call this phenomenon. Your brain is actually very plastic. Now, that word plastic sounds unusual. It just means it's very malleable. And all these connections can form and they can break up and reform. It's always on the move in some ways, the brain, in various ways. And listening to music promotes brain plasticity, which means more connectedness and increased cognitive performance. And again, the study showing if someone listens to music and then they do some kind of puzzle, they do a bit better because the brain is actually sort of developing connectedness while it listens to music, and that makes the brain a bit more effective. And very importantly, it's especially good in childhood. So if you have a child or you have a relative, whatever it is, that's under the age of 10 or a friend who's got a kid or whatever, get them to do music because it helps their brain develop connectedness, and that increases their cognitive performance and they get a bit smarter, I suppose that's one way to put it, because it's allowing all these connections to form, especially in childhood, although it does work at any age, this increased connectedness by playing or listening to music. And one big thing they've shown is what are called interhemispheric communication. Now, what is that? Well, your brain, I hope people know, is in two parts. There's two hemispheres to the brain, the right and the left. And down the middle, there's all these neurons connecting the two halves of your brain, right? And there's some evidence that each half does slightly different things. So one half is more involved in intellectual stuff. The other is more involved in emotion. That's been questioned recently, but still, there's something going on with the two hemispheres. If you listen to music or play it, you'll increase the connections between the two halves of your brain. And that's been shown now physically, you know. They can measure this connectedness. So a really big effect there, that the brain is able to communicate with itself a lot more. And maybe you'll bring emotional intelligence to bear on something with that increased connectedness. So again, there's good evidence for this. And the reason for this is, what's happening here actually is, if you listen to music or play music, whole bits of the brain, different parts, are doing things. So first of all, if you play an instrument, it's motor skills. You're moving your fingers over the holes in the flute or on the keyboard or whatever it is. And those motor skills are kicking off fantastically well. Secondly, you're concentrating, a very good thing for the brain to do. The third thing is you have to use your memory often. You remember the notes and what's coming next. And that's a bit like riding a bike. It's kind of subconscious and the memory pathways are being triggered. And probably the fourth one being the most important, it's very social. And social activity is like fantastic for the brain. Now, it's social because you're often playing with fellow musicians or you're playing to someone else. And there's a social connection between you and the audience or whatever. And this means the brain is lighting up like a Christmas tree all over the place. And that really helps the brain function and helps the brain sustain itself and improves this thing called plasticity. So for all those reasons, you know, it really helps the brain do what it should do and helps the brain function, I guess, if you listen. Listening will suffice, of course, concentratedly, not just in the background, although there's some evidence background music is good as well, but focused listening is great. And then if you play the instrument yourself or sing in a choir, it's great because all these things are firing off. And of course, loads of studies have confirmed the beneficial effects of being in a choir. Now, the last one, and I love this one, they've studied this. You can't beat what scientists study. They've scanned people's brains listening to music either live or recorded, right? So they must have put some kind of device on people's heads to measure the brain waves. And guess what? Live is much better. And that was done in the university in Zurich. Live brain reactions are much more pronounced than listening to recorded sound. So therefore, go to a gig, right? Now, the reason for this, they think, is you're with other people and there's a social aspect to that. And then secondly, you're communicating with the musicians on the stage, and there's some kind of crosstalk happening in a live setting with live musicians. So go to a gigs because the musicians need it. They need money to survive, and going to a gig is much better, or a concert or whatever it is, than listening to the recorded stuff. Now, the recorded stuff is still good, not knocking that by any means. It's just slightly better if it's live. And what they've noticed as well is one part of the brain called the amygdala lights up in a live setting. And guess what the amygdala does? It's all about emotion. The emotional sensation is being enhanced in a live context. So go to live music. It's a really good thing for your brain overall. And there we have then the four beneficial effects: speeding recovery after surgery, staving off dementia, promoting brain plasticity and cognitive performance, and then live is better. The science of music. You heard it here first. And of course, thanks for listening as ever. And my podcast is a News Talk production, available every Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.